we're going to look at a rather complicated process, and that is the process that's happening in the loop of Henle. And it's not obvious when you first look at the loop of Henle what on earth's going on. There's all sorts of different things happening, and the first thing we should do is divide it up and look at it in steps. So the first thing we'll do is the loop of Henle has a descending limb to it and an ascending limb. And you want to remember that outside it's surrounded by interstitial fluid, and there are also blood vessels, which we'll talk about at the end. So as you look at the loop of Henle, the first thing you notice is as the urine approaches the descending side, it's at a concentration of 300. And what you see is as it goes down the descending side, it becomes more and more concentrated. Eventually, by the time it reaches the bottom, it's at 1,200. And so you might say, oh, well, obviously we know the purpose of the loop of Henle. We are getting rid of a lot more things into the urine. We're making it far more concentrated. But then the strange thing is, as it goes up the ascending limb, we find out it becomes dilute again. So it goes from 1,200, and by the time it gets to the top of that ascending loop, it might be back to 200 again. So that kind of gets rid of that theory, because we haven't concentrated the urine after all. So let's try and work out what's going on by dividing it up and looking at the properties of the loop and looking at it step by step. So the first thing we want to do is we look at the ascending limb. We always start with the ascending limb, including when we're looking at how the whole thing works. So if you look at the ascending limb, there are two very important properties. First of all, it's impermeable to water. So it's not going to allow any water in or water out. And the second really important feature is it's covered in active transport pumps. These active transport pumps are moving things like sodium and chloride and potassium ions. Okay? And the way they work is they actively transport from the urine into the surrounding interstitial fluids. So they're always going from urine into the interstitial fluids. And remember, it's active transport, so they can work against the concentration gradient. So those are the really important properties you must remember for the ascending limb. Number one, most important thing, covered in active transport pumps, and the pumps will pump from urine to the surrounding interstitial fluid against a concentration gradient. So now let's look at the descending limb. The descending limb is pretty much the opposite. It is very permeable to water, but it will not allow sodium chloride to move in or out. It's got no active transport pumps. There may be a slight movement of sodium that is able to go across the membrane, but in general we say impermeable to water. Sorry, in general we say very permeable to water and impermeable to the movement of sodium and chloride. So these are the things we have to realize before we can look at how the actual loop of Henle works. So we know its properties. So let's do them one more time. The properties of the ascending limb, which we look at first of all. Impermeable to water, covered in active transport pumps. Properties of the descending limb, very permeable to water, not able to move sodium and chloride, no pumps. So now we're going to see what's going to actually happen in the loop of Henle and how it works. And in order to do that, we're going to make some assumptions. We're going to say that the urine to start with is 300, concentration of 300 everywhere. It's 300 as it approaches the loop of Henle. It's 300 in the descending limb. It's 300 in the ascending limb. And all the interstitial fluid, which is all around the nephron, right, around the descending, the ascending, and the collecting duct, etc., is all going to be at a concentration of 300 as well. So we're starting off, everything's at 300. Well, let's look at the loop of Henle and let's see what can happen. So if everything's at 300, what can happen? Which side of the loop can we use? Well, the only answer we can come up with is the only side we can use is the ascending limb. And what's going to happen in the ascending limb is you'll be able to turn on the active transport pumps. And remember, they're pumping from urine to the interstitial fluid. So they start to pump. So let's see. Everything's at 300. Let's pretend when we move one molecule of sodium, it changes the concentration by one. So we pump one molecule of sodium out. So what happens? Concentration inside goes down, 299. Concentration outside goes up to 301. Okay, it's active transport. It can pump against the gradient, so the pumps keep on pumping. Pump another one out, 298 inside, 302 outside. Now, one of the interesting features of these pumps is at some point they are totally saturated and they can't pump anymore, and they can do that up to a concentration difference of 200. So what difference is that going to leave us with? If we started with the inside at 300 and the outside at 300, you have to have a difference between them of 200. Well, the inside will drop to 200 and the outside will rise to 400. So can you see now you've got that difference of 200 between the urine inside the ascending limb and the fluid in the interstitial fluid? Okay, now the pumps will turn off. They've pumped to a maximum value of 200. So now let's go to the descending limb and see what will happen there. Remember, the descending limb is still at 300. We only changed the concentration when we rounded the bend and went to the ascending limb. So the descending limb is still at 300. But the thing you have to remember is all the interstitial fluid is now at 400. When we worked our active transport pumps, they put up the concentration in the interstitial fluid, not just the interstitial fluid that sits beside the ascending limb, but it's a tiny little distance, all the interstitial fluid surrounding the complete nephron. So now the descending limb is at 300 and all the interstitial fluid surrounding it is at 400. So what can happen now? Well, we know the properties of the descending limb are that it can move water. So now water starts to go out by osmosis from dilute to more concentrated. So if we go with our simple version we started with, where every time we move one molecule we change the concentration by one, let's imagine we take one from the inside and we pump it outside. So in theory the concentration inside will now go up because you've lost a water molecule, 301, and you would think the concentration outside would go down to 399 because you've added water, it should become more dilute. So what's going to happen now? Well, remember, those pumps on the ascending limb will always turn on until the concentration difference is 200. So as soon as the interstitial fluid changes to 399, my pump now on the ascending limb can immediately pump again and keep it at 400. So the idea you want to get into your head here is all the interstitial fluid is at 400 and it's going to stay at 400 even though the water's going out. So what happens now is water moves out from the descending limb and it keeps moving out until the concentrations in the descending limb and the interstitial fluid are the same, and then it will stop. So what do we end up with? We started with 300 in the descending limb, 400 outside. We finish up, everything is now 400. So let's review our concentrations and see what's happened with this first stage. We've now got urine and the whole of the descending limb is going to be sitting at a concentration of 400. Soon as we turn the corner and we go up the ascending limb, it's all sitting at 200. And really importantly, all the surrounding interstitial fluid is now at 400. So let's turn the pumps on and let's see what happens again. Let's move the urine. So if we now move that urine that's sitting at 400 in the descending, if we now move it around the corner, right, and it's now in the ascending limb, so you've now got urine in the ascending limb just as it rounds the bend at 400. The interstitial fluid is at 400, the descending limb is at 400. What can happen? The only thing that can happen now is again you turn the pumps on in the ascending limb, and remember they pump out. So out goes sodium from the ascending limb into the interstitial fluid. The concentration in the ascending limb drops and the concentration in the interstitial fluid increases. So if you started off with everything at 400, remember, what's the difference? You can only ever get to a 200 difference. So the inside will drop to 300 and the interstitial fluid will rise to 500. So now, as we round the corner, the ascending limb, we've got urine at 300 and all the interstitial fluid everywhere outside is now at 500. All right, let's go to the descending limb. Remember, we left the urine in the descending limb at a concentration of 400. Now the outside fluid is 500, the interstitial fluid. So what will happen? Yet again, you will start to lose water. Okay, you'll move your water out, and as you move your water out, the concentration in the descending limb of the urine will become more concentrated. It can only work until the concentrations are the same. So now what have we ended up with? From this step, we've ended up with urine in the descending limb, which is now at a concentration of 500. All the interstitial fluid everywhere, not just around the loop of Henle, but also around the collecting duct, is all sitting at a concentration of 500. When we round the corner and we look at the ascending limb, we've now got a urine concentration of 300. So you can see what we're doing. We're explaining how we make the urine more concentrated as we go down the descending limb. We started with a urine concentration of 300, then we saw how we could make it 400, now we've seen how we can make it 500. When it rounds the corner, you can see it immediately becomes more dilute. It's become 300, and then further up it was 200, and so on. So we've done what we wanted to do. We've shown how you make the urine in the descending limb more concentrated, and we've shown how you make the urine in the ascending limb more dilute. Why, though? We haven't even worked out why is that going to be helpful to us. Well, the answer lies actually in the interstitial fluid. Remember, while we've been doing this, we've also been changing the concentration of the interstitial fluid. As we go down from the top of the descending limb down to the bottom, not only is the concentration of urine in the descending limb increasing, but so is the concentration of the interstitial fluid. So at the top it's 300, and then it keeps going 400, 500. By the time you get to the bottom of the loop of Henle, you can have interstitial fluid at a concentration of about 1,200. And then you want to remember that interstitial fluid is not just surrounding the loop of Henle, it's surrounding the entire nephron. So let's take us now to the collecting duct, because this is really the whole purpose of the loop of Henle. So the whole purpose of the loop of Henle is to create that concentration gradient in the interstitial fluid. Why? Let's look at the collecting duct. The collecting duct is one of the main places where you can reabsorb water. That means you are taking water from the urine into the bloodstream. That's what reabsorption is, remember, moving things from the urine into the surrounding blood. Well, how are you going to do that? Well, let's imagine the urine approaches the collecting duct at a concentration of 300, okay? And if it was surrounded by interstitial fluid, which was also at a concentration of 300, you would not be able to move any water, because remember, you can only move water by one process, which is osmosis. So what happens now is we've created that lovely gradient in the interstitial fluid. So urine now moves down to the next step, and it hits interstitial fluid, which is actually at a concentration of 400. So now water can move from the urine into the interstitial fluid until they're both at the same concentration, which is 400. And then the water will move from the interstitial fluid to the blood. And we can keep going down again. We can go, now the urine is at 400, it hits the next interstitial fluid at 500, you can reabsorb water. And this will keep happening the whole way down the collecting duct until the maximum concentration you can usually make your urine is about 1,200. So that tells you that you have reabsorbed nearly all the water that was in the urine. And the other thing that you'll find, of course, is you've got these blood vessels which are wrapped all around the nephron, around the collecting ducts, etc. And really, remember, you're going to be reabsorbing things across and into the bloodstream. When you reabsorb the water, you eventually want to move it across into the blood vessel. So let's just finally recap what we've learned about the loop of Henle. Loop of Henle is really, really important. It's really important because you actively transport things on the ascending side, and on the descending side, it's really important because it's permeable to water and you can move water. And those two mechanisms allow us to create a concentration gradient in the interstitial fluid. And the reason that's so important has got nothing to do with the loop of Henle. It's because when your urine is going along and down the collecting duct, that is where you want to do a lot of reabsorption of water. And you can only reabsorb water by osmosis if there's a concentration gradient. So this allows us to have urine approaching the collecting duct at 300, and then it increasingly hits the concentration gradients of 400, 500, 600, etc. So I can reabsorb my water up to a concentration of about 1,200. And then the last thing to remember is, of course, you're not just leaving it in the interstitial fluid. You've got blood vessels surrounding the whole of the nephron, and that is where you're going to move your water into.